Hey everybody, this is Albert Escobedo, your host for the Pet Peeves podcast. Just asking if you like my podcast, if you're enjoying the content and what you're listening to, become a sponsor. Find the link on the Anchor, the sponsor link on my Anchor website, and or on the SoundCloud website. Wherever you find the descriptions for these episodes, you can find the link to become a sponsor. For $1 a month, $5 a month, $10 a month, help the podcast grow. Thank you guys very much. Thank you for listening. Bye. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Pet Peeves Podcast, episode number 41. Welcome to the podcast, comedian, very funny comedian, somebody I recently got to roast battle, Rebecca Rush. Rebecca, how's it going?
Hey, I'm good.
Cool. Yeah, I just roast battled her, what was that, like 2 months ago? And that was the first time we had ever spoken, pretty sure, right?
It's so hard to tell when that was. It's so hard to tell when anything was.
Yeah, it was a while back. So we've been trying to get this recorded, but there's been one technical hiccup after another or some stupid drama. I think one night the carbon monoxide detector started going off in the middle of the night. And my wife thought all our pets were going to die. Anybody that knows anything about carbon monoxide poisoning, that it's odorless and tasteless and like you can't see the gas. And when the detector starts going off, it's pretty scary. But we live in an apartment where there's nothing burning. There's no gas. There's no coal. There's nothing burning that would release carbon monoxide. So those detectors like are really detecting for a huge carbon monoxide leak that could possibly be from the water heater that's in the building. But then everybody's alarm would be going off and everybody would be dead. So I just didn't worry. But, you know, better safe than sorry. We got that taken care of, but we had to postpone the podcast. And now here we are. I don't know. That was like a month ago. Wait, we're way more into Rona now. Way more into it. How's the corona been affecting you?
I mean, much like everyone, I weirdly got a better writing gig. I write articles about recovery. And somebody hooked me up with this place that pays double what the last place I was writing for. And then these people found me on Instagram, like another recovery thing, and they're paying me to do these Zoom panels about addiction.
That's awesome.
So I've been doing okay. I mean, there are some weeks where I made more doing like the shows that at the beginning, the Zoom money has definitely slowed down. But when people were more excited about Zoom comedy, you know, I put my show online. I was making money off that. And then I was making money off the shows that I was doing. And a lot of them, I'd worked with these people before. Those shows didn't pay in real life, so that was...
Yeah, that's awesome. You guys found a way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that the enthusiasm is interesting. Originally, you know, there was a lot of Zoom enthusiasm, and then it waned out. And me too. I'm really tired of being on Zoom, extremely. Even though we're doing this on Zoom right now, thank you. It's getting old, you know. I'm just, like, tired of being in front of a computer, honestly.
I mean, I had shows with, like, 40 people... would bring in several hundred dollars of my vulnerability show. And like everybody on the lineup was good, but it was like nobody that you might've heard of. And my last show, I had Deborah DiGiovanni and Eddie Pepitone, both national headliners. And I only had 10 people show up and I only brought in $16, which didn't even cover my expenses. And
damn.
I was like, you know what? I'd already planned on a hiatus, but I was like, I think it's time. At this point, I just feel bad asking people to show up to Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
For things they don't have to. But yeah, August is, I mean, LA kind of shuts down in August anyway. It's weird to shut down further in your life when everything's already been so slow, but I am
not a further shutdown.
Taking the month off my podcast and my show. So I just got a new co-host. So I'm excited about that. And we'll start back up in September.
And it all revolves, this is the show that revolves around sobriety.
No, it's about vulnerability, which is bigger than sobriety, you know?
Oh, okay. Like admitting your... Well, I think the sobriety is a huge topic. That's one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on. Aside from you being a pet lover, I think what... one of my most popular episodes is a guy talking about his depression. So, and I think that that's just a topic that I wouldn't have predicted is extremely useful for people, especially people that think they're tuning into a podcast about comedy or pets. Then they catch a glimpse of other, you know, larger topics, like you said, being vulnerable. And then they kind of gravitate towards the information that you're giving, whether it be about sobriety or about pets or about comedy or whatever. But the vulnerability is the underlying connector between people that actually listen to a whole hour and a half podcast with me. You know, who would want to listen to me? Not that many people, but the topics and the guests are great. So I'm glad you're here, and I hope everybody listening appreciates it. So I do. I appreciate people like you out there being an advocate for sobriety, which I think is huge, and an advocate for vulnerability. So where does that concept come from, the vulnerable part?
You know, I think the first time that I was in rehab, I was very much a person where I would deny everything. And, like, I felt like if I admitted anything wrong with me, that people would, like, run away from me. But everybody could see people are not stupid, you know, or they're not as stupid as we think they are. And people can say, when I remember the first time I admitted something and people were, like, nicer to me, it was, like, the beginning of this, like, wait, like, learning how to own my shit was this decade-long process for me. And the vulnerability concept just kind of hit me. So what I do is I have all the comics say something that make them feel vulnerable. I always talk about new stuff. And sometimes I get, like, you know, sometimes it's, like, really deep. And then sometimes it's, like, about how I shit on the side of the road on the way home from a show I bombed because I was too embarrassed to, like, go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
You know, because the bathroom was, like, next to the stage. I bombed so hard. My cousins came to see me in Costa Mesa. I bombed so hard that the guy after me got on stage and said, "Don't worry, I'm not sober." So I have all the audience members in person write down something that makes them feel vulnerable, and I pass those out anonymously to the comics. And then the comics have the opportunity to roast them, do normal material, and also talk about something that makes them feel... I had a guy talk about his suicide attempts at one of my first shows, and it was weirdly ended up being funny. Like, he tried to kill himself when he was 7 for the first time. Like, a 7-year-old, like, what a 7-year-old thinks will kill them is oddly hilarious.
Pretty funny, yeah. I bet. It's like cartoonish.
Yeah, so in Zoom, I just have people send them through the chat to me, and it's an honor that people trust me. And then I just copy paste them and send them to the comics. And when I was doing it in person, I would just pass them out without looking at them. And now I see them all. So I pick them, like, I'm like, oh, this comic, well, this will be funny for them.
Oh, that's cool. No, that's awesome. That's a very unique concept.
It's very connective. Especially with Zoom, because it brings everybody together, and then people are like, well, what are they going to say about, and then getting, like, custom roast jokes about something that you're scared of that makes you feel vulnerable, which means, like, open to attack, but not having that extra level of feeling like people, like, you know, people are laughing at this
thing. They're not picking on you.
But they don't know that it's you, so you feel this little bit of, like,
safety, security.
You know? Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I was going to ask you if the roast battle had anything to do with your vulnerability, like doing roast battle, because I was doing roast battle before and I didn't know you. And then I left and came back, and then you're doing a lot of roast battle. So was it somewhere in your recovery that roast battle became an option or an idea or something you wanted to do?
And I roasted a few times in New York, and it definitely, like, the learning curve of it, like, it used to take me a lot longer to write the jokes, and I would get really, really stressed out about it. And I just it helped me build a thicker skin, which I appreciated. And then this psychic that I used to talk to, I stopped because she posted some really problematic meme during the protest that whatever. And it's not even what she posted. It was like, I gently was like, this is racially insensitive. And she came at me with this level of white fragility that was like, I've spent a lot of money with you, bitch. Like, don't treat me like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But she told me that it would be good for my career, and I saw that, like, I'm not, you know, I've been sober since I moved to LA, so I'm not, you know, smoking weed with people outside of shows, I'm not drinking with people after or before things, I'm not doing that kind of connective hangout, so Roast Battle gave me an opportunity for people to know who that I was, to prove myself as a good comic, and to make the huge sprawling comedy community of Los Angeles a little bit smaller, and give me, like, it, looking back, like, it's given me a place to belong.
Yeah, and that's awesome. I think I kind of look at it the same way. And Roast Battle did a lot for me. I mean, in the beginning, as far as helping me feel like I belonged and mostly helping me feel like I was a real comic. And then after that, you know, kind of it changes what it means to me. What it meant to me then is different than what it means to me now, mostly because of the people that I was doing it with then are all really not doing it anymore. So that's changed it too. And then people are just not hanging out as much. Like you're talking about the drinking outside and the smoking outside. I used to do that daily, but I can't do that anymore. I'm different. I'm older. I'm married. Most of my friends that used to do that don't do that anymore either because they've moved on in their careers or they've gotten into relationships or they have a kid or whatever reasons they have. So all that, I mean, it's just a natural growth. But I think that the roast battle, as far as this topic, making you more vulnerable, have a thicker skin, that too, it kind of got everything out that you would think would make you less appealing to people. But once you put it out there and in that format and you really let talented, like the best comedians out there, take you apart piece by piece in front of everybody else, it's hard to not be more confident after that. After that, I definitely had nothing else to lose. Then I could just do comedy. I could just tell jokes after that.
Yeah.
I didn't have to prove myself so much.
Yeah.
And what about with the animals? Is animals a big part of recovery for you or with other people?
I got my dog. I mean, my ex-husband had two dogs, but he had a dog when we met and I had a cat that ended up going to live with my sister because his dog was like a shepherd and she was terrified of it. And my sister still has that cat, but we got a dog outside of a Walmart. Like, just, we went to buy hangers and we lived in North Carolina briefly, just a cardboard sign that said puppies. And he was fine, but it wasn't like the dog that I want. Like, you know, I mean, like, he was my dog. He was cool, but he wasn't like my son. It wasn't my furry son. And then I was in Key West with my mother and I went into this like dog shop and I saw Nico was like ignoring everybody. He was marked down because he was so weird looking. He's a Dachshund Yorkie and he was such a weird looking baby. He was just all ears. And
sounds cute.
He was ignoring everybody, but he came over to me and I picked him up and he peed on my arm and I was like, I have to take him. And I my husband had just bought like another, he made a lot of money, but he spent more. He grew up really poor and like he was an addict and he had that kind of mentality of like, well, someone's going to take it away from me, so I should just spend it all the second I get it. And things were always stressful in that realm. So he had put a deposit down on another car, like a Corvette, and then told me like, I have to take it because I put a deposit down, which is not a real thing. So I put a deposit down. That had just happened. And I was like, I got drunk that night and like went into our car garage and like opened the doors and left them open. So in the morning the car wouldn't start. And I was like, haha, not such a great car. but I put a deposit down on Nico and then I called him and I was like, I'm getting this dog. And he was like, you can't have another dog. You have a dog. And I had this minute where I was like, I'm going to have this dog longer than I am married to you. And I put Nico on two different credit cards because I didn't even have enough room on one. And then later declared bankruptcy, so he was free.
Wow. Beat the system.
And then, like, we were strung out on coke, and I was drinking every day, and Xanax and Percocet, everything that goes along with daily cocaine use.
Damn.
And it's like I couldn't – he likes to lick your face, and I'd be like, oh, no. Okay. And I'd always be, like, cleaning the floor because I'd be like, oh, no, did some coke fall out of my nose? And, like, the dog's going to – I'd put them in another room and, like – or we'd be out partying like for overnight and I would just be like, fuck, like I thought my ex-husband was very abusive and I kind of thought like I deserve this and I don't know how to live on my own. But I'd like look at this innocent little puppy and I'd be like, he doesn't deserve this. So within 6 months of getting him, I went to rehab and
wow.
And then like came back, got him, moved into sober living with him. I mean, I relapsed. And then we moved home. So by the time he was a year old, I had left my husband and been through rehab.
Wow.
And I don't, like, I probably would have died there if I hadn't gotten him.
Yeah, that just, like, consistent, is it just that you had something to worry about or somebody, like, you know.
He was so innocent, so I could, like, project innocence onto him. Like, I really hated myself. I was raised to hate myself. My mother is very mentally ill, and she kind of took it out, like, at us. So, and I had a lot of trauma. So I just like when kids are treated badly, they think it's about them because like they don't think it's about
they don't know any better.
Well, we're dependent on our caregivers. That's like what our species is. So you can't like your brain can't like handle knowing like how unsafe you are. So you just assume it's your fault, and then you're like, if I just do better or do this, like I can make this better because if it's your fault, you have control over it.
All right.
So I just like for so many years, my life was just like trying. I was such a fuck up still. And I was just trying to make my life better on behalf of the dog, which like a boyfriend called me out for. He's like, you don't even want to live with me. He's like, you're just trying to get a secure house for your dog. And I was like, maybe I am. But like I was able to project my own innocence onto the dog and like keep making my life better for him until I started to love myself enough. I'd say like 3-4 years ago, I got onto that journey.
Well, that's proper. I think that makes more sense to me than the opposite when people are not willing to sacrifice their own comforts for their pet and their pet is obviously suffering. I don't understand that mentality. I understand yours. You see your pet not as happy as it could be, so you want to make some changes for it because you feel responsible because it has no control. I mean, that's why I like helping animals. I believe, and it's hard for me to articulate, but I like helping animals because they can't help themselves. And I feel like a lot of other people that say they want to help animals, they're doing it for the wrong reasons or they're not clear in their reasons why they like to do it. Because, you know, a lot of people that work in animal medicine or veterinary medicine are very, like, closed-minded. They have these, like, closed-minded views of what animal welfare is or what caring for an animal means, but they're only used to what they're doing and where they're from and what they've seen and what they were taught. So it's, unless you've seen everything, done it all, been all over, you got to be more open-minded about how people treat their pets, whether they want to treat it like a baby or whether the dog sleeps outside. Like, I really can't judge people for how they take care of their pet. I can just try to help. And another topic before I forget, because I always forget things I want to talk about, is you brought up in one of your posts recently about getting a purebred cat. And that's something that I thought is... Go ahead.
Did you hear him?
Is that your dog?
He has a dog-friendly hotel, so he's 7 pounds, and he's got to protect me.
No, that's awesome. Is that the dachshund? What was it you said?
He's a dachshund.
Jack Russell or Yorkie?
Dachshund Yorkie.
He's dachshund Yorkie.
So tiny. Okay, you got it. Thank you. Good job.
My dog's a dachshund rat terrier, and she's the best dog. I think the dachshund is a great breed. Great breed.
Oh, you did such a good job.
The protector.
Yeah. We're so tight. I love like being able to take him where it's just me and him. Cause now that I have the cat and he's not a huge fan of her, they kind of have this relationship like Britney Spears used to with the press where like she's crazy and he's like following her around like, can you believe she's doing this shit?
I think my dog gets mad that the cat has more access than her. The cat can like get wherever she wants and the dog is stuck on the floor. And I think that pisses off my dog. But other than that, they get along really, really well. We had the dog for 4 years and then we got the cat. And it's always a weird moment. You don't know how they're going to get along, but they're great. They're like best friends.
He's like constantly going near her just to fart. Like he farted in her face like last month. Like, and she looked at me like, are you fuck kidding me? It was like a roll down, like, who's Brittany now? And then they both,
that's
like,
how he displays dominance.
They left the room. They both ditched me in the fart cloud. And then they came back 5 minutes later and acted like nothing happened.
Tried to blame it on you.
No, they just like left me to sit there in it. I guess I could have left.
Stewing it.
I was like, thanks a lot, guys. You just left me alone with the fart.
Yeah, it's funny. The dog farts are cute though. I don't know if my cat farts so much as her shits just smell bad.
My cat was a little farty, like, the second month I had her. If I give them, like, sometimes I'll go to Bristol Farms, this, like, gourmet market, and get, they have, like, shredded rotisserie chicken already, and, like, so they make everything so easy for you. And I'll give them rotisserie chicken, and that makes them fart. But they fucking...
Because they just gobble it down so fast. That's what it is. They try to eat it all fast, swallowing a bunch of air.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it's also normal.
It weirdly, like, pleases me so much, like, when they can eat the same thing. Like, because I'm like, you're a dog and you're a cat, and you both eat this chicken. Yay.
Yeah, they can. It's not terrible. I mean, that's, like, the one commonality. You could give them both shredded chicken and rice. But cats, I don't know. I don't know if my cat would eat anything but cat food. I've never given her anything but cat food. She just eats dry cat food.
My cat's obsessed with everything I'm eating. Like, she's eaten cookie dough. Like, she just, I have to, like, be like, get off, go away. Like, she tries to, like, he, like, will beg and, like, sit there like a dog does, but she, like, tries to crawl in my food.
Mine's opposite. My dog will be on top of me, like, putting her paw on my arm as I'm trying to put food in my mouth. And the cat isn't interested at all. I could leave a whole plate of food on the table in front of the cat, and she's not interested in it. She doesn't want it. But the dog will eat anything. The dog you cannot trust, not for 2 seconds. And I don't know why. The cat, I think it's because we've never given it to her. The cat's never tried it, so she doesn't know that it tastes good. But who knows? She might change. She's pretty young.
Sugar, my cat. Whenever I have something sweet, she, like, very much wants it.
I guess my cat likes, like, ice cream. If you have ice cream, she wants to eat that shit.
Oh, yeah. So getting a purebred cat. So I actually, I was watching the Taylor Swift documentary, as you do, and I saw this cat, and it had, like, that bicolor pattern, and I was like, if it was all fluffy, and I was like, what the fuck kind of cat? And I grew up with Siamese cats, so I always kind of had this feeling like, those are the best cats, those are the only cats, every other cat is, like, not as good, which is, you know, not necessarily right. All cats are great. But that was just, like, how I was raised. And
I get it.
And so ragdolls, I, like, Googled and I found out that it was a ragdoll, and they, Siamese is one of their parent breeds, so they have, except for the bicolor ones, but they have, like, the pointed markings, and they have a lot.
Yeah, isn't it like a Siamese and a Scottish Fold mixed or something like that?
It's a Siamese and, like, an Angora, like a long-haired white cat. That was, like, the parent breed, and it was supposedly the white cat that was, like, floppy and relaxed. There's this, it actually is a breed that originated in Southern California, and this crazy lady claimed that her cat Josephine, who is like the mother queen, the queen of the whole breed, got hit by a car, and like she claimed that her DNA got changed at the vet when she got, and that that's why, and that she couldn't feel pain after, which is why she was so relaxed and floppy, which is why they're called floppy cats. And the rest of the breeders, like, two people got cats from her and then distanced themselves and started their own, like, ragdoll standard because she just got crazier and crazier the older she got.
That's awesome. Crazy cat lady. That's the originator.
Classic Southern California. Yeah, like, the OC, of course, is where the ragdoll originated.
But yeah, I think I don't know. It's a pretty, it's not, cat breeds, purebred cats are not that popular in general. But as far as popular breeds go, ragdolls are pretty popular. And then the Persians, the Siamese, the Russian Blues. And I think purebred cats are super smart. They're different. They are different than, like, a regular domestic short hair, domestic long hair. They just seem to have, like, a different kind of intelligence. I don't know. How old is your cat? Is this pretty young, though, right?
She's 6 months. She's going to be 6 months in a few days. So in order to mitigate, and well, the thing is, cats are so easy to come by for free. They're just everywhere. Mm-hmm. But I fostered a cat while I was waiting for her to be old enough. Like, I researched breeds. I found a lady who had a litter February 2nd. And they were, like, a month old, and she had kittens, like, that weren't... She had a huge... Her queen had a huge litter, 9 kittens. So she still had a few left, and I reserved... She had, like, 3 left. She sent me videos of all of them. I picked out the one... I thought I wanted a certain color pattern, and then I just picked out the one that looked like she had the best personality. And I'm like, oh, I don't give a fuck about... I thought I gave it... And I'm like, I don't care what it... Like, mittens, no mitten... Whatever. Like, it's fine. Like, give me that one who enjoys playing with a toy the most. So I fostered, I'm part of LA Underground Cat Network and several cat groups on Facebook. We should talk about cat groups on Facebook because those are
an
endless source of drama and entertainment. So I fostered a Siamese cat for a month, and he now has a forever home, a flame point that was found outside of a Denny's in a field in Bakersfield. And, he did not like us very much. He peed on my bed. He would, like, hide behind the toilet all the time. And I'm like, you know, I've also spent, as an alcoholic, a lot of time lying next to a toilet. Like,
not a good place to be.
But he has a forever home now and with a family that understands that he needs a lot of patience. And he did start to, like, come out and, like, look around. Like, he mostly lived in my closet. And he would get mad at me when I went into my closet to get my own shit. But it's, who knows what he'd been through, you know?
Yeah.
So I felt like that mitigated the fact that I was buying a purebred cat and not taking a cat out of its shelter that I did help. And I feel like maybe everybody should do that. If you're going to get a purebred cat, you know, usually you're not going to be able to take the cat home right away. So while you're waiting for the cat, foster another cat, help them get a forever home, and then you feel better about what you're doing.
Yeah, I think there is like a balancing act. Like, you should help out the animal community. If you say you're an animal lover, then you should be doing something for the animal community at large. You know, it's just how I feel. But like, if you're going to buy a purebred cat or a purebred dog, either way, as long as you're doing the research, you're getting it from a real breeder and you're not helping the backyard breeder problem. Like you said, there's free cats everywhere because there's so many cats in shelters. Like, you ever been to a shelter? It's wall-to-wall cat and chihuahua and pit bull. It's just the saddest shit, but it's mostly cats stuck there. So the only thing I have a problem with is people buying cats that are not from proper breeders. You know, they're paying $200 for something somebody's calling a Siamese, and I'm like, dude, there are no proper breeders out there selling purebred Siamese cats for $200. That does not exist.
No, they're gonna be like $1,500 easy.
Yeah, I tell anybody, if you're not spending like $2,000 on a purebred animal, it is not purebred. I don't care what it looks like. I don't care what certifications they show you. I don't care if you think you know, they are lying. They bring in fake parents, they bring in fake documentation, they bring in fake pictures, and they just lie their asses off. And people don't know. People just don't even know. They don't know that a purebred cat or dog is not fucking cheap. You're not going to get it for $500, $700, $800. Like, oh, I got a deal. I'm like, no, you bought somebody's problem. You bought somebody's genetically predisposed to cancer animal. And, you know, these conversations are great for people to hear. I don't care if people buy purebreds. I don't care. I used to think there was something wrong with it. But in general, like, as long as you're taking care of your pet and it doesn't end up in a shelter is all I care about. Like, I just hate the shelter system. I just think it's fucked that people are out there still paying for animals, like at PetSmart or at, you know, like you said, in front of a Walgreens, when there's all these animals in the shelter, unless they're getting them from the shelters, which is a good system too. Like, you foster from a shelter and then people adopt from the shelter. But it's never going to go away. It's never going to go away. I don't know what to do about this problem. Spay and neuter your pet, I guess. Yeah. Oh, that's the last time I talked to you. You got your cat spayed. How did that go?
Dude, she was really good. I definitely overpaid for her spay, her vest in West Hollywood. And then I would see, like, everybody in my cat group be like, Fix Nation, go to Fix Nation. And I was like, I don't know, man. She had the kind of stitches that are under the skin. She had some high-tech shit going on. Like, she's got no scar. She healed beautifully. They gave me, like, kitty morphine for her, which I guess was optional. Like, it's insane to me that people would opt not to spend an extra $40 so that their pet is more comfortable. Like,
yeah, I would say for a spay, you need pain control. Maybe not for a neuter. A neuter is less invasive. A spay is extremely invasive.
Yeah, so she had the cone. She hated the cone. She never tried. They were like, you can take it off when you're watching her. And I'm like, well, lucky me. I'm home all the time. Mm-hmm. So I took the cone off because she was so miserable and kept trying to take it off. And she never tried to lick her stitches.
So yeah, most cats don't. But you just worry about the few that do.
Yeah, one of my sister's cats, I guess, like, not everywhere gives them a cone. So yeah. One of my sister's cats went so obsessively licking her stitches that she got, like, an infection, and it was a big vet bill. But what people are doing so I'm in, like, multiple ragdoll cat groups, and there gets to be a lot of drama. People will be like, that's not a ragdoll. Like, people get really, like, that's not a purebred, or, like, you know, whatever. People freak out because every once in a while somebody talks about, like, declawing, and then everybody has a meltdown at them, which they should. At least once a week I see a post which an admin has had to turn off commenting for.
Yeah, those are touchy subjects, the declawing.
Well, I mean, just a lot of, like, and then the person that, like, got whatever hate will be like, yeah, you know what? Fuck you, people. And then they'll make another post. It's like, I don't give a shit how much ragdoll he is. He's my baby. And then it's like, well, just go in a regular cat group. Like, if you're in a purebred cat group with a cat that's, like, a mix, like, whatever. Like, just like, I guess this guy had a cat that was a blue-eyed white. His eyes were, like, turning green, and he was sold as a blue-eyed white. I think it was one of those, like, got a deal. But then they're like, The doctor said he might be a masking mink. I don't even know what that fucking means. But he had to come back and, like, yell at everyone in the group again.
No, it's incredible. I mean, I stopped arguing with people. In the beginning, you know, you'd meet somebody who has an obvious Chihuahua and be like, oh, this is my Pomeranian. Like, that's not a Pomeranian. That's a Chihuahua. Like, no, it's a Pomeranian. Like, okay, I'm sorry. It's a Pomeranian. And I have to, like, write on their medical record whatever they say the breed is, regardless of what it obviously is or isn't. So after that, it's just like, whatever. People are going to do whatever they want with their breeds. But as far as being a breedist, I don't understand that. Like, if you think one particular breed is better than the rest or one particular coloring is better than the rest, I don't think that's true. There's, like, whatever, a pit bull or a chihuahua or a fucking Great Dane. There's good dogs and there's bad dogs all over the place. And they all need homes. They all need homes. Or let them out. Let them out on the street. That's my other idea. Just no more shelters. Just let them out.
Yeah, like how it is. Like, have you ever been to, like, Costa Rica or any...
Like, yeah, so like every third world country.
Where the dogs are like... This guy explained it to me, this tour guide guy there. And he's like, well, they're taken care of by, like, the whole community. Like, these dogs aren't skinny. At least, especially not in Costa Rica.
No, I was in Thailand and the dogs, the beach dogs, they're Buddhist there. So they believe all the dogs are living through their karma and their other lifetimes. And it was normal. The dogs had their own little community that everybody respected. And there were certain parts of the island that you don't go down because that's where the packs of dogs lived. But then there's parts of the islands that the dogs don't go down because that's where all the people are. So it's like just this symbiotic community where I'm sure the dogs are helping with local pests and local wildlife. And yeah, sure, some dogs cause problems, but so do some people. And I didn't see a problem with that because they don't have doggy jails, you know, where there's just thousands of animals living in a cage. And people don't understand. You really think a cat living on the street that gets hit by a car, but it lived on the street for 5-6 years is not better than a cat that lived in a cage for 15 years. Like, you think the 15 years in a cage is more humane than the cat who lived on the street and maybe died at 6 years old because it got hit by a car or eaten by a coyote? Like, I don't understand how you can differentiate. Like, if I were the cat, I'd rather be free for 6 years than in a cage for 13 years.
I briefly worked for this woman in Brooklyn who was like, my dogs were rescued from the streets of Costa Rica. And then I went to Costa Rica and I was like, those dogs are better off than in your stupid apartment in Brooklyn.
Yep.
Like, are you kidding me? Like,
yeah, and that's hard to argue with people too, because every once in a while, if you're a tourist and you go to one of these third world countries and you see the dog in the gutter or you see the dog with his leg hanging off, like, yeah, that's one dog. Like, there's thousands or hundreds of them. And it's just like everything else. You can't help them all. You can't help them all. But the shelter system is just not working. And people that love animals, you need to go volunteer at the shelter or adopt or something. And, like, we want to foster. I think, like, what you did fostering is probably the best way to go about it because it's non-committal. But, like, my building manager, like, I don't know if I could just bring animals in here. I live in an apartment. They might have a problem with that.
It's also what's cool about fostering. And I think when Emma gets a little older, I probably will start fostering again. I just want to, like, I feel like she deserves to have, like, her babyhood and have all the attention, but is that it's not a financial commitment. Like,
right.
When I fostered, they provided food for me. They provided
medical goals. Care.
Like, yeah, you don't have to worry about medical care. If they need something, the rescue is going to take care of it. And that was great. Cause I made a deposit on Emma and then the world fell apart and, like, you know, my income changed and I debated whether or not I was going to pick her up, you know, because I was like, do I have another $1,000? Like, should I just, would it be better for me financially to lose 500? But, you know, like I talked to like trusted friends and I was like, yeah, I'm going to do it. And you know what? My rent is still paid and everything has worked out. So I'm glad I still got her, but it was a debate. It's also really funny with the breeds is that, so Emma, I picked Emma, but there was one of her sisters was 2000 because they were show quality and there's show quality and pet quality. And I cannot figure, she's so cute. I can't figure out what about her made her not show quality. I think her mittens right. are like on an angle. Maybe they need to be perfectly straight, but I think it's cuter that she's got the little slant mittens.
Yeah, the things that make your animal more unique to me are cuter than if it looks like all the other dogs.
They do very much look a lot alike. People always think Nico is a Chihuahua. I'll get him again. And I used to get mad at people when
I saw him. I saw his little face when he popped up. He didn't look like a Chihuahua.
A lot of people think he is, and I used to get, like, mad at them, and I used to correct them, like, in the dog park in New York and Washington Square. And then I finally just stopped, like, and then one night I was out walking, and I saw a Chihuahua in, like, the window of a van, and I was like, they stole my dog. And after that, I never gave anybody shit.
You can see why they think that.
I thought my dog was this Chihuahua in a van, and, like, magically somehow somebody went in my apartment building and stole him and
dog napped you
in their van while I was walking around the corner to get pizza, like, in those 2 minutes.
See, that's why I don't want my dog to look like other dogs. I'm not against purebreds, but when I go to, like, a shelter and I see all the different dogs, like, I don't know, I think it's cute that they have things about them that no other dog has, like the mixed breeds, the mutts, that they just look totally unique.
Like, when I grew up, like, with purebred cats, and I just, my ex-husband had, like, he spent a fuck ton of money on, like, a purebred German Shepherd with the training and all that shit, and it just never occurred to me until the last, like, year. I just didn't know about, I don't know why, I just didn't know about rescuing, and from here on out, I don't think I'll ever buy an animal again. Like, knowing what I know now, but I try not to be too hard on myself for whatever.
No, don't be hard on yourself. I mean, you have a pet, you're taking care of your pet, you've prioritized your pet, and I think that's all anybody can ever ask for in the veterinary community. Like, as far as I am concerned, people should spoil their pets. Like, if you got to go one way or the other. Either you're going to neglect your pet or you're going to spoil your pet. There's really no middle ground. Either you're there or you're not. And if you're there, you're going to spoil your pet. If you're not there, you're going to neglect your pet. So you're there, that's great. And as far as spending money on, like, purebreds and stuff, that's case by case. I mean, the purebreds need home twos. It's not like there's not purebred German Shepherds that are locked in cages for their whole lives. That exists too. And as far as breeds go, German Shepherds are an amazing breed if you get the proper breed and you get the training and, you know, you have somebody to groom it and give it the attention and activity that it needs. Then it's an amazing breed. But how many people out there getting German Shepherds have any fucking idea of what they're getting themselves into, just as far as training, not to mention grooming, and not to mention the size of the animal? Like, everybody thinks they want to get a big dog, but what happens when your big dog gets hurt or sick? How are you going to get that big animal to the animal hospital in an emergency? How are you know, these types of breed research people don't do.
Get all that. What happens when your big dog shits in the house? It's terrible.
Yeah. People don't consider that either. They shit more. They eat more. They fucking are going to cost you more money if you have...
Their buttholes are so big.
They got giant assholes.
Yeah, I mean, because their shits are like... You're like, how the fuck?
Dude, my cat shits as big as I do, and she probably weighs 7 pounds.
Stop!
Yeah, I don't know how they do it either. They just, like, engorge their colon, I guess. They just pack it down. let those turds get big.
My cat, does your cat follow you into the bathroom?
She doesn't follow me. She follows my wife. My pets definitely prefer my wife over me, and I don't know why. I think she just babies them a little bit more than I do, which is enough to make them prefer her. But they definitely will just sit in the bathroom and watch her go to the bathroom. It's like Cinderella or whatever the hell, where the animals just follow her around, and they'll just sit and watch her like get ready, and watch her brush her teeth, and watch her go to the bathroom. If she leaves the bathroom door open and she's in the shower, they're both in the bathroom, like laying on the bathroom mat. They don't do that for me. I get jealous. I'm a little bit jealous.
Emma stopped doing it, but when I first, the first 2 months I had her, every time I took a shower, she sat on the mat and cried, and I'd have to open the shower door, and then she'd put her paws up on the ledge and, like, watch me take a shower. She could not handle it.
Yeah, that's my wife with the pets. They, like, want to get in there with her, and she'll bring them in there with her, and then she'll, like, shower them. She's crazy.
I take Nico to the shower sometimes. He doesn't love... I learned from, I don't know if you've heard of Justin Silver. He's a New York comic, but he's also, like, a dog expert, and he had, like, some dog show, and he's a dog.
Is he the guy, did I see him on, like, America's Got Talent or something? I saw, like, a animal expert on one of those contest shows, but
I don't know. He's a cool dude. He wrote a book about dogs, but I learned from his book that dogs are not afraid of the bath. They're afraid of the faucet. So... I was like, holy shit, poor Nico. Like, when I was still smoking weed and drinking, I would just be like, ah, come in the shower. And he'd be like, ah, I hate this. And I thought he hated baths, but if I run the bath, be with him out of the room, turn off the thing, get, like, a big cup, and just put it, and then get in the bath with him, he likes it. He's way more into it.
I never heard that. We'll try that. But my dog, she's little, like your dog. She's 14 pounds, so a little bit bigger. But easy enough to put in the bathtub and give a bath. And she doesn't fight too much, actually. And neither does the cat. They take it pretty well, actually. But, yeah, not all the time, but sometimes. Yeah, I know that you're really, you shouldn't have to. The cat is young. She's healthy. She could do it. But whatever reason, my wife insists on doing it. And, like, you should do it maybe once a month, maybe, if you're going to bathe your cat. But any more than that is overdoing it. And I think it's just, like, a matter of bonding with her.
I had to put her like in the shower once because she's still a baby. And there's a big debate in the ragdoll cat groups. I guess ragdolls specifically need to stay with their mom longer. And I got her at 9 weeks, which is apparently too early. And she definitely, like, I'm having to teach her myself about, she's really into, she likes to bite me when I'm meditating. Huh. And she enjoys a, I had a neighbor over and she's like, why is your cat biting me? And I'm like, this is what she fucking wants to bite everyone. Like, she gets in certain moods where she just wants to be bitey. But she.
But just because she's young, she's like, that's normal. A lot of cats are like that.
She steps in her duty. She's getting better about it, but like, she's so into covering her duty that she'll end up stepping in it. And she's a long haired cat, so then she'll have a duty foot. So sometimes I call her Princess Poopy Paws. But I had to, she got such a bad duty foot one day that I did. I was like, girl, you going in the shower. Like, and she was just like so not thrilled about it, but she was fucking covered in duty.
No, like, I think that's another thing too. Like, you have to get your pet used to being bathed in case it needs to. Like, if it gets all full of shit or whatever, that's another, like, at least it should have the experience of getting a bath at some point when it's young. So it's not totally freaked out when it's older. And that it's not a terrible experience. Like you said, doing it slow or turning on the faucet beforehand or anything you could do to reduce the stress in that situation. Because, like, my cat did the same thing when we first got her. She would step in her poop, and then she would try to clean her paws on the wall next to the litter box. So then we'd have, like, poopy paw marks. And this is when she was really little. She's gotten better at it. Like, she aims better. Or actually, I think we got a bigger litter box. I think that's what we did. Because she was small, and as she got larger, the litter box was too small for her. So we got a bigger litter box, and that helped. And then we also got a little, like, mat that goes under the litter box that's for, like, cleaning their paws. So I think it knocks off some of the shit. But I don't see her stepping in it anymore. But I'm glad that we can clean her paws. I mean, little paw wipies, those work. The wipies for your pets, those are key.
For me, it was, like, a big thing of being, like, when I was in New York, my apartment, I had a studio in the West Village, and it was so tiny, and I just wasn't stable enough. So, like, in my head, like, I always wanted another cat. I felt so bad. When I had my cat, right when I met my husband, I was all coked out, and I would put coke in my cigarettes before I went to bed and leave the window open, and this was, like, the biggest shame of my life. My kitten would climb in between the screen and the window to, like, look out. And sometimes I would pass out and the window was old and it would close. So wow. I'd wake up a couple times in the winter in Connecticut and my cat would be stuck in between the window and sucks. The screen. And I felt like the biggest piece of shit for, like, I think it's only been the last few years that I've forgiven myself. And it was always, like, it was a thing for me to be, like, one day I will be stable enough and have a stable enough life that I can have a cat again. So it feels like it felt really good to be, like, oh, yeah, like, I'm a real adult now and I can get a cat and I have a big enough apartment. And also I live in a courtyard building that's my property manager is, like, obsessed with cats and it's fully enclosed. And there's an upstairs and downstairs. There's tons of plants. And we have a pool. And the cats in my building are allowed out, like, in the courtyard, because they can't get under the doors.
They can't get out.
And fucking Emma loves it. And I was like, this is so cool. Like, it's like having a cat be outside. It's so rad. She fucking loves it. Like, she's friends with all my neighbors. She doesn't so much like strangers. Not that she's met that many. But, like, my friend Mary, she's like, ugh. But she seems to, like, understand that people in the building are, like, part of her pride or whatever. And she...
Sure.
is super into the people in the building. And she just...
Oh, yeah, that's super cool. I wish I had something like that.
I, like, feel like I know my neighbors more because I already bonded with all my dog neighbors, but now I bond with all... And all the dogs in the building are not allowed in the courtyard unless they're on a leash so that the cats don't get upset.
That's awesome.
Yeah, she knows, like, they're allowed out 7 to 9 morning and night. So at 7, she's, like, at the front door being like, can I go outside, please?
No, that's so cool. I feel bad because we take my dog out with us everywhere we go, but the cat can't really. We got one of those cat book bags. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I'm going to get one of those.
We have one of those, and it's cool, but we can only take her out in it when it's not hot out. If it's hot out, we know she's going to bake in there. Well, that, so we only take her out at nighttime.
How long can you really be out there? They don't have water. They don't have a way to go to the bathroom.
Not very long, like 20 minutes. You know, within 20 minutes of her being in the backpack, I start to feel sorry for her. So I wish it was like I was taking her somewhere with the backpack, like somewhere cat friendly. Like, we'll take her to the park with us every once in a while and like keep her on a harness, and that works pretty good. But it's definitely not like the dog. The dog gets to go wherever she wants. We take the dog with us on the airplane. We take the dog with us when we go hiking. We take the dog with us when we go on a road trip, and the cat just is stuck at home.
I feel like it's helpful to know comics because you always, in terms of like taking the dog on the road and leaving the cat, because you always know a comic in like a shitty living situation and that is like thrilled to be able to have a one bedroom apartment to themselves for a few days.
You have no idea. I just had a Tony Bartoloni. Do you know who that is?
I've heard the name.
So Tony is essentially homeless, and he's one of my best friends, and he and I known each other for a long time, and he stayed here to take care of my pets while my wife and I went to Texas. I told you we were in El Paso recently for her birthday, and he stayed here. And of course, this is like the best living situation he has, is to stay in my place, one bedroom, and take care of my bearded dragon and my cat and my dog and my fish. But it is nice to have comedians that would love a place to stay. And I paid him too, so he had like all the perks. He got some money, he got to hang out, he got to make friends with my pets that are pretty awesome pets, so he's kind of privileged in that. Then he got full refrigerator privileges and all that shit, and I'm happy to do that for him as long as my pets are alive when I come home and he doesn't try to replace them.
He leaves when you get home and doesn't like, okay, I live here now.
No, he knows that's not an option. That's definitely not an option. But he just moved in somewhere. Good for you, Tony, if you're listening. Tony just moved in with Isaac Hirsch. Do you know who that is? Another comedian.
I also have heard the name, but I don't know who he is.
Yeah, so good luck for you guys. You know, they're moving in with like a comedian house. I think there's like several comedians living in a house together.
I always pay, and somebody was like, oh, like everybody I know, like they just have friends. And I'm like, yeah, but I want to be able to require a certain level of care for my animal. And I don't feel entitled to that unless I'm paying somebody.
Absolutely. No, that's so I can make requests. That means I can call you and tell you to do something and you're going to do it. And also, like you said, there's different level of care when you're being paid versus not being paid if it's not your pet. And that's for sure, unless he volunteered to do it, which he did not. I called him and asked him. You know what I mean?
I had somebody that they're not a comedian, but they have like a podcast where they have comedians on, and they're like newly sober, and I did a psychic reading for them, and it kind of came up that they needed to be single. And they're like, yeah, I've been in this string of toxic relationships. I really want to focus on me and my new sobriety. And they had volunteered to watch Emma. And then like a couple days before, they're like, so I'm going to be in a Newport Beach with my friend all day, but I'll still sleep there. And I'm like, yeah, like I was like, look, just, and then it came out that like, oh, this was not a friend. This was a guy she just met on Tinder. And she's like, well, I know you don't want a stranger in your house. And I'm like, I would rather have a stranger in my house than have my cat.
Than no one there. Yeah.
Cats are independent, but she is a baby. She's a baby that I got during coronavirus. She has never been alone more than a few hours. Like, she doesn't know that life. She does not know what to do with herself. Mm-hmm. And she was like, okay, he'll come here. And then, like, she changed again. She's like, yeah, so I'm going to be doing this. And I'm going to be looking for a house in Long Beach. But, like, I'll still sleep there. And I was like, yeah, girl. Like, nah. Like, I'm going to find somebody else to watch my pet. Like, no hard feelings, but, like, sometimes you're just like, oh, we clearly have different opinions about what animal care is.
What isn't.
And, like,
yeah, man. It sucks that you got to teach that to people or have that conversation with somebody. Like, I had another friend watching my pet, and I was like, yeah, can you go feed them in the morning? Like, I feed them around 7 a.m., and then they're going in and feeding them at 10 noon, and I'm like, that is not the same thing. Like, we already have a different opinion. Like, you think it's no big deal that my pet didn't eat for 12 hours, and like, that's, I understand that they'll be fine, the pet will be fine, I understand all that, but that's not what we agreed on. And your casuality of that big time difference lets me know that we are not on the same page. Okay, on what is proper pet care.
I have a story about my building. So there's this guy Casey, and he's like the only one in the building who like parties. Like, you'd see like people coming out of his apartment, like creeping down the catwalk to like, and you're like to smoke a cigarette, and they're like, they hear a noise and they're like, oh, and you're like, oh, they're on coke. Like, and, he'd always have his door, but his, they actually changed the rules on how much cats used to be allowed out 24/7 in the courtyard, but because Casey's cats were out 24/7, they changed the rules, and they were also like peeing in the, so he left for Canada the day the borders closed to be with some woman he met online that he'd never met before in life. And he had taken me to a Grateful Dead concert, and he knew I was sober. And on the, he told me the concert started at like 4 or something. And on the drive there, he had to stop at a dispensary, and like he could have done that already. And then we get there and it was freezing. I didn't bring a coat because I thought the concert start in the afternoon. No, he wanted to pregame. No, we left at like 1 p.m. He wanted to pregame for like 6-7 hours and get wasted. And I ended up leaving after the first set. I magically found some sober people with these like one show at a time pins. And I was like, thank fucking God. But it was so stressful. So I already kind of knew Casey sucked. But he left, and then he like called me and he was like, my friend is coming to stay with the cats while I'm in Canada. I don't know how long I'll be gone. Can you feed them and like clean their, and scoop the litter box? He won't be here for a few days. So I was like, sure, whatever. The litter box was so just, it was like, he hadn't cleaned it in months, and he had like a diaper genie, which a lot of my friends with cats have. But when I went to put the poop in the diaper genie, it like exploded.
It was full.
Yes. And I felt so bad for these cats. They were so fucking hungry. Like, I was bringing them over. I didn't have Emma yet. I just had the foster. So I was bringing them over toys and catnip and all the shit that I had gotten for my cat. And he's like, they only need to eat once a day. And I was like, do they? And he's like, they're in training. I'm like, training for what? To be neglected? Like,
to be starved? Yeah.
So his friend decided not to come. He was like, of course, why would anybody want to be in LA when they live outside of LA? You know, nobody wants to be in a city when they could be not in a city right now, especially not in March when we were like super freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
And so he started like, he was like, well, you'll have to take care of them. And I was like, whoa, like I'm getting I have a dog. I have a foster. I'm getting another cat in a month. Like, I can't be responsible for 5 animals, especially not like, his cat's dutied a lot. And
there's 5 of them. That's a lot of duty.
And so I looked up online what like the cheapest rate I could find for to feed one cat, and he had 2, and I charged him less than that. I asked him for $75 a week, I think, or 100 or something, which is like nothing, right? And he was like giving me shit. He sent me like $50, and then I was like, is this like forever? Like, you know, we need to like, and then I was like, look, I'm going over there to play with them, and like I'm doing this, like, and he's like, well, they don't need any of that. They don't even need to eat every day. He was like, they don't need toys, they don't need catnip, they don't need to be played with. And I was like,
yeah, contrary to that, yes, they do. Cats should eat many times a day, many small meals.
So I was like, I don't feel comfortable. And he was just like blowing up my WhatsApp. And I was like, look, I'm not going to be part of you neglecting your cats. Like, he's like, look, it's not a big deal. Just feed them like once a day or so, you know, scoop some poops. I don't know what the big deal is. I can pay you like $50 a week. Like, it kept going down. And he's like, I can't afford. I'm like, maybe you couldn't afford. Like, this is like, stop making your problems my problems.
Right.
And then it ended up that like nobody likes Casey. So his mother had to come pick up the cats. And then he's like texting me, telling me I need to help his mother get the cats from under the bed. So I'm like, whatever. And then I have to carry. And he's like, you have to carry the litter for my mom downstairs. And I'm just like,
damn,
dude, like, whatever. And then the mom's shaming me about it. She's like, it's a shame they couldn't stay home. Like, too bad you could. I don't know why you couldn't take care. She's like giving me shit about it as I'm helping her.
I'd be so annoyed.
And then one of my neighbors was like, oh, man. And I guess the reason, because I'm the newest one, or I was the newest one in the building at that time.
So he had exhausted all his other options?
Yes, he had burnt all his bridges. And I heard so many stories about what a bad cat dad crazy Casey is. And he came back just this week married to this woman that he went to Canada for.
Shut up.
Nope. And so I guess once Casey left his cats in the courtyard, went to Burning Man, called somebody in the building after he was 4 hours away and was like, hey, take care of my cats. Like, not even ask the question. Like, I'm at Burning. And I guess he did that to people all the time. Like, he would leave and then announce to someone that they would be taking care of his cat for free. And then when you say like, no, I can't do that, it's like, why? It's not a big deal. It keeps telling you how you should
feel about it. It's not a big deal. Yeah.
Like, but, and yeah, so I guess everybody in the building is just like hates him. So he's just going to prey on, there's a new guy in the building. He's probably going to try to befriend him, you know, make him watch him get wasted at a concert that his cousin paid for. And then try to nab him into caring for his... I don't even think his cat... I think his mom still has his cats. They're sweet cats. You know, it's not the cat's fault.
Yeah, it's not the cat's fault. Yeah, sucks. I don't blame the cats.
But it would be so... The week I fed them, they were just always so hungry. Emma does eat, like, several... I free feed her with kibble. Both my pets are on a grain-free thing. Nico eats something that's, like, small batch, gently cooked. And it's like beef, and because he was on raw, but he started to get over it. He still sometimes is on raw, but I got him gently cooked. He prefers that. So I get him the grain free. He won't eat the grain ones. And she's on, I tried to get her on the grain free, like my perfect pet. It's super expensive, but it's like they're small, whatever. And she was not having it. She had no interest in it. She prefers, she prefers the crappy food her breeder sent her with, but. Cats are so weird about texture. She will only eat like a pate and kibble. Really? She will not eat anything that's not a pate. But
I think my cat, we've given her like for her birthday, we got her some like canned cat food that was like a pate, and she did like that, but she didn't like it as much. Like we thought she would be all crazy and like wolf it down, but she didn't. She kind of licked at it a little bit. She likes her hard, regular cat food. Her like, what do I get her? I get her like a indoor cat hairball free type cat food, whatever I can get from the website. I have like a vet tech website for cheap cat food, so I just get like the one that they recommend the most, and that's it. That's the one I get, the one that's the most highly recommended.
Emma was on IAMS from the breeder, and then I transitioned her off of it, and she's on Wellness Kitten grain free now. She enjoys it.
Yeah, it's better.
That's fine.
The grain free. I mean, it's definitely better.
If she wants to refuse the super expensive shit that the dog is on, like, fine with me.
Good for you, yeah.
But she eats several times a day, and I feed her on the kitchen counter on this one section that's just for her because the dog will eat her food.
Yeah, that's the – I just – you saw me looking over like this. This is because I thought I heard the cat eating the dog food. So we have the problem with both. The cat will eat the dog food, and the dog will eat the cat food. So we have to feed them separately and just, like, portion feed the amount that they'll eat in that moment. And then if they don't finish what's in the bowl, we have to take it away. Otherwise, they'll try to eat each other's food. And just to be, like, assholes. Like, they don't – like, one will get done eating, be full, and then gravitate over to the other one's bowl – just to be an asshole. And they'll like check to see what's in the other one's bowl to see if it's something that they like or want. So it's just like constant struggle. We put the cat food up, but then she still tries to eat the dog food. And then my cat started doing something recently. She's trying to drink the water out of the fish bowls. I never saw her do that. And then all of a sudden I caught her doing it twice, drinking the water from the fish bowl. And she has a water fountain, like a functional, perfectly good water fountain that I actually advertise in this podcast. And we have to get to that commercial break. We're about to take our commercial break. You all right with that? A little break? And then we'll wrap up. We actually have been recording for almost an hour now, so we'll just do like a little bit more after this. We got a couple of segments and some questions from the internet, and then we'll sign out. We'll take our little commercial break. Thank you, guys. We'll be right back. What's up, Pet Peeves podcast listeners? If you or someone you know has a cat, and you notice this cat drinking from the bathroom sink or from the bathtub, it's because cats prefer cold, fresh, flowing water. Most people leave a bowl of water on the floor all day, and cats don't like to drink it. This causes a lot of cats to develop kidney diseases later in their life. We'd like to recommend a plug-in automatic water fountain to our listeners. The Purr Power Pet Fountain is perfect for cats or dogs. It has a centralized fountain, which is great because we had one where it was on the side and my cat and dog would make a big mess. The sound of the water flowing will attract them to the fountain and they can drink fresh, flowing water all day. It does come with a filter that needs to be cleaned and changed from time to time, similar to a Brita water filter. Use our Amazon affiliate link in the description to purchase the Purr Power Pet Fountain and you will help support the Pet Peeves podcast. I recommend this for any pet owner out there who wants to prevent kidney failure and kidney problems in their cat or dog, and for people who just want to get their cats out of the sink and out of the bathtub. Use the Amazon affiliate link in the description and help the Pet Peeves podcast grow. Thank you guys, and let's get back to the episode. Hey, welcome back to the episode. Thank you guys for listening to the plug, the Your Power Pet Fountain. If you have a cat that's drinking from your faucets, drinking from your sink, drinking from your bathtub, it's because cats like cold flowing water. Get a pet fountain, plug it into the wall. It's automatic. Fill it with water. Cats will drink from that. You'll decrease the likelihood they have like kidney diseases when they're older, especially cats. You got a cat? Your cats drink water pretty good? Your cat, I mean?
She drinks a lot of water. So I got a second fountain. I already had a fountain
for a fountain. See? Of course you're awesome. Do. See, because you're fucking smart. Everybody out there that doesn't have a fountain, you're doing it wrong.
She was drinking out of his fountain in the kitchen and ignoring her fountain. So I moved her fountain into the bedroom, and now they just share both fountains so they don't have to. If one of them wakes up in the middle of the night or we're about to go to bed and we're already in the bedroom, they'll just drink out of that. So they don't.
That's awesome.
It's not like my apartment's huge, but it's bigger to them than it is to me. So they now I get, you know, use out of both my fountains. They're happy with it. And she likes to drink out of the top of the fountain, and he drinks out of the bottom.
Yeah, my cat drinks out of the top of the fountain, and actually I started recommending the fountain we have now because the faucet or the fountain tip is at the middle of the fountain. I used to have one where it was on the side, and since she would drink out of the top, it would run down the side of her face and get all over the floor and leave like a big puddle of water. So now we have one that drips in the middle, and she still drinks from the top, but it doesn't make a mess, but... She does the same thing. I wonder why. The dog drinks from the pool, and the cat drinks from the top of the fountain where the water's coming out of.
Yeah, but when I took her home from getting spayed and she was all high on cat morphine, she kept, like, the whole first night, she kept sticking her paws in the fountain and then getting shocked that the water was wet, like, over and over and over. It was amazing.
It's funny. It's like a high person playing with a water fountain.
She was just like, what? What the fuck? And she just kept doing it and looking at me like, can you believe this? This shit is wet. Awesome. And then she would drink some, and then she'd stick her foot in it again and be like, oh my God, it's still wet.
That's hilarious.
It was really that's cute.
Like, yeah, I gotta get a cat. Cats are so funny. They're so funny. They're so much fun.
They have so much fun.
Because they play with everything. Everything's a toy to them. They have that, like, I'm gonna send you a video of after this. Have you ever seen this video where this, like, couple does a sketch where the man dresses up like a cat and runs around the apartment fucking everything up? It's so funny. It's like my cat at 2 o'clock in the morning, like on the dot, she wakes up in the middle of the night and we could just hear her like messing around in the apartment, knocking stuff off of tables. And then we'll wake up in the morning and sure enough, she's like knocking stuff off the tables and making a mess. And there's just this video of a couple depicting that. And it's just like spot on that the cats in the middle of the night wake up and start running around making a mess. Your cat doesn't do that?
Ragdolls are known for being like an incredibly affectionate, some people call them lazy breed. So she, at first she would like, you know, she thought bedtime was like foot attack time and stuff like that. But at this point, now that I've had her 4 months, she sleeps either on a pillow next to my pillow or now she like creeps closer. So she sleeps next to my head. Like we both woke up with the earthquake the other night together. Like, what the fuck? Sounded That's like weird. Somebody was breaking in, but she likes to sleep when I sleep.
Yeah, my cat will sleep away from us. Every once in a while, she'll sleep on the pillow, but not next to my head, next to my wife's. But she definitely wakes. She did the toe biting and the hair biting and the ear biting when she was a lot younger. She doesn't really do that anymore when we're sleeping.
I can tell when Emma's in a bitey mood, and it's just like, if I try to pet her head when she's in a play mood, like, that's my bad, you know?
Yeah, it's going down.
But she doesn't do it hard. She's just trying to play. Sure. So I'm like, all right, playing. It's bird on the stick time.
My cat doesn't bite so much anymore, but she did when she was younger. But she seems to have grown out of it. What else was I going to say? Oh, yeah, about your cat getting spayed, and you said you paid a lot for it. I wanted to talk about that, too. I got my cat spayed at, like, low-cost bus in L.A. I got my cat spayed for $5. How crazy is that?
Yeah, it cost me over $500, and they gave me a low estimate and a high estimate, and then it was higher than the high estimate, and I was irritated.
Yeah, you said you overpaid for it, and so people ask me about this all the time, especially my students, like, what's better? Like, I for sure risked my cats for $5 because they don't run the kind of general anesthesia. They don't have, like, emergency stuff there. They don't. So you're taking, like, a chance that they're going to use – way less of their ability to do the spay than they would at a regular animal hospital. But I've done so many spays that it's pretty routine. Like a doctor should be able to do a spay in a bus, in a car, on the sidewalk. They do so many, you know, before they can even finish doctor school, before they can call themselves a veterinarian, they have to have like 1,000 spays and neuters under their belt or some high number. So I just had to make the choice. Am I going to let my cat have the risk of not making it out of this anesthesia so I could save some money? Or am I going to spend $500, $700 to get her spayed at an animal hospital? And the only thing is I know is that at the animal hospital, they jack up the price with all the stuff that's not necessary. I've done surgeries. I've been there. It is not necessary to do all these things that they're going to require you to do. Is it helpful? Yes.
Because they called me and they're like, I had to bring her in. Like, there was in the contract from the breeder, I had to bring, so I have a 2-year health guarantee, but I had to bring her to a vet within 72 hours of getting her to get a well kitten checkup. And I did that. And so she got spayed only 2 months after that, and or 2.5. And they called me and they're like, well, you just had all this blood work, so you don't need to get it again. So it, right. And then they said, and then I was like, why is this costing more? Then they're like, oh, well, the blood work. And I'm like, the blood work that you told me you did not need to do. And
I was about to say the blood work. That's exactly what I was going to say next. Like, is it good to do blood work right before surgery, like day before, day of? Sure. But if it's a young, healthy pet, especially if it's had blood work before and that was all normal, is it really worth charging people? It's like another $200, $90, $200 for the blood work, depending on what kind of blood work. But still, for a young, healthy animal, like, you got to understand, in the shelter, they're doing spays and neuters all day long, and they're not running blood work. They're not placing catheters. They're not putting in the dissolvable under-the-skin sutures. They're doing everything as cheaply as possible. And I've never seen an animal die under anesthesia because of the surgery. Anytime animals die under anesthesia is because the person running the anesthesia made a mistake. Like, every once in a while, you'll have, like, a real, like, you know, a bad reaction of medicine, or, you know, the dog had some underlying condition that we didn't know about. But 99% of the time when an animal dies under anesthesia is because somebody fucked up the anesthesia, which could happen no matter what. It doesn't matter if you're working in a van or at an animal hospital with the best doctors around. Like, fucking up the anesthesia could just happen. It's just like human error.
Woke up suddenly, I guess, out of anesthesia and bit the shit out of the vet. And I was like, well, that's what you get for overcharging her mom.
That was, yeah, there you go. That was her payback.
Like, to the point where they had to tell me about that she bit the shit out of the vet.
Good. No, I think it's funny when I see vets get bit and shit because they're all arrogant. Yeah, I'll have like, I'll be like, hey, doctor, this dog's pretty scary. What do you want me to do? And they're like, oh, I'll grab him. I'm like, all right. And then they get bit. I'm like, you really think like I'm afraid of a regular animal? No, this dog is like differently aggressive. And they get bit. And it's like, okay. Or get scratched by cats. I think it's awesome when it happens. Because it happens to everybody. If you work with animals, you're going to get bit and scratched at some point. It's no big deal.
I do appreciate, like, another thing I feel like it's important that you need to pay your pet sitter is that I use Albamani, and I love him. He's a joy. He's a comic, you may know. And he will send me pictures, like, all the time that I don't have to ask for. And, like, yeah,
that's awesome.
I want pictures multiple times a day if I'm away for 4 nights.
Hell yeah. Yeah, we have a Furbo, a pet camera, because we want to know what our pets are doing when we're not home.
Oh, yeah, my friend has one of those for her dog.
Tony turned it off within day one of pet sitting. He turned it off.
She'll be like, oh, she's barking. Why is she barking? And yeah. I'm like, huh? Because we're like hiking somewhere.
Yeah. It's awesome, though. If you guys, we should start putting the Furbo as a sponsor on this podcast. I talk about it all the time. It's pretty fucking cool.
How much are they?
I think it was like $160. But it's like a one-time thing. You don't have to pay for the service like you do for some of these other cameras where you could watch on your phone. It's not like a monthly service. It's just an app that comes with the device, and it's a one-time payment. So it's pretty nice. It would be better if it came with like two, right? Because you kind of have to face it at one part of a room, and if the pets aren't there,
yeah, that's what I was thinking. I'm like, I feel like they spend a lot of time in my bedroom when I'm not around, but I don't know.
Right.
Because I don't have
So with the Furbo, you could talk to them and you could send them a treat so they'll come to the camera, and they tend to hang out around it now because they're associating it with treats. But then we got to put like a cat or dog friendly treat in there. So I just been putting the cat food in there. The cat food works as a treat for both of them, and they like it. And it's the right size. It's got to be something small that'll shoot out of this little hole. Damn, man. There's so many things that I was going to talk about, and now people started asking questions on Facebook, and I want to get through those because people like that. You mentioned Albamani. He's one of my older friends here in L.A., one of the guys I've known the longest from the Show Up, Go Up show in the Belly Room and from Roast Battle in the early days and him just being, you know, a stable, cool dude. Okay, so the questions from Facebook
yes.
is where I wanted to start back on. So we were talking about Albamani. He's a cool motherfucker. Shout out to Al. He made all my roast battle posters. I don't know if he still does that.
He's made some of those for me. He's a good man. I really like him.
Heck yeah, man. He's so like, what would I say? Just like sincere, I guess is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is the questions from Facebook from my friend Megan. Sorry, her name's Stephanie Ischler. Her question is about Mega Esophagus. Stephanie is one of my friend's wife. So I met them in South Korea when I was teaching out there, and they have a podcast and a YouTube, and you guys should go check them out. I think she has one called Finger Painting Star. She does like finger painting now on YouTube. But her question is about Mega Esophagus and picky dry food eaters. So Mega Esophagus, this is interesting. I was reading an article that you shouldn't have your dog eating with its head facing down where the bowl is on the floor. That Mega Esophagus is something that happens from them swallowing food up is a big problem with Mega Esophagus, that they're trying to fight gravity when they eat with their head down and they're swallowing up, especially for large breed dogs that have more of a distance to cover with a bowl on the floor than a small dog. So they're saying that you should actually put your dog's bowls up on like stools or some kind of, you know, device or, you know, thing that can lift it just to put it off the ground a little bit so they don't have to crane their neck down while they're swallowing. The other thing is them eating large things and swallowing that. Another thing I know causes Mega Esophagus is if you use a collar on your dog and they pull on the leash a lot, it can cause trachea problems and esophagus problems. And then what else? Just it's a large breed problem in general, the Mega Esophagus. So if you have a big dog and that's anything 50 pounds or larger, they consider a big breed, you should try feeding your animals elevated, an elevated feeding surface. There you go. How about that? And Guam Felix has a question. You know Guam?
Yes.
Yeah, Guam's awesome. He's one of the door guys at the Comedy Store, roast battler, one of my better friends too. Known him a long time. Shout out to Guam. He asks, how old should puppies be before you take them hiking? What are the best breeds for active owners? Okay, this is a good question. How old should puppies be before you take them hiking? It depends on the breed. I mean, really, it depends on what you call a puppy as well. I probably wouldn't take my dog hiking until it's fully vaccinated and had some, you know, and it has to be big enough. Like if it's got short little stubby legs, hiking's going to be hard for your dog. So it's got to be big enough and vaccinated enough for me to feel comfortable. But I would say, I don't know, at least 4 months, like at least 4 months, because that's when they're going to have all their series done and at least their first rabies, maybe, hopefully. And then you could take them out. But again, if they have short little stubby legs or if they're just small breed animals, taking them on long hikes is not always going to be good for them because they're going to run out of breath fast. They're going to get hot faster. And it's not easy for them to go on long hikes with human beings that have these nice long legs meant for walking long distances.
I would like to add to that like my dog is old and he's tiny, so he gets tired fast. So if I take him on a hike, I bring a sling. Like, it's kind of like a baby sling, but it's made for pets.
That's
and
awesome.
He looks tired. I just pop him in there, and then he gets to still see everything, gets to breathe the fresh air, and he's only 7 pounds, so it's not a big deal
yeah. for me. If you have a small dog, that's obviously something that you guys should consider, carrying the dog. Put him in a sling, put him in a backpack, or just carry him in your arms if they're smaller. So for big dog owners, it's a little bit more complicated. But, like, you got those, like, English bulldogs or Frenchies or any of these dogs that have short, stubby legs. They're hard to take hiking, and especially those English bulldogs and those Frenchies, those pugs, they have the small snout, the brachycephalic, where their face is pushed in. So they can't breathe properly anyway, let alone the short, stubby legs, let alone the heat that people don't take into account when they go hiking, all those things. So it's breed-dependent, it's age-dependent, it's vaccine-dependent, how old you should take your puppy hiking. But I would say at least 4 months, 6 months, if you want to be smart about it, and then depends on how long your hiking trip is. Your animal should not be open mouth breathing if it's hot out. If it's open mouth breathing, your dog is hot. And if drinking water isn't stopping the open mouth breathing, then they're still hot. So you either got to pour the water on them. Hiking is a problem for dogs. They overheat and they die a lot. So you got to pour water on them or ice or whatever you got that's cold. Put alcohol on their feet, like rubbing alcohol on their paw pads helps. cold water, try to get them to a vet where they can get them on fluids as fast as possible. But that open mouth breathing is what you got to watch for. What are the best breeds for active owners? Active breeds, it depends on what you're doing. I definitely like any kind of Labrador if it comes from a good breed, any kind of Shepherd if it comes from a good breeder. I mean, even my little dog, she's pretty great. She's a Dachshund Rat Terrier mix, and she could be pretty active, but she's little, so I can't take her on too long of hikes. So it depends on what you're doing. But I definitely think active breeds are like the dogs that have working jobs, like the working breeds, anything in that working breed category.
Yeah, I mean, Labs and Retrievers love swimming, and, like, that's fun for, like, an active person. Because if you take them on a hike where there's streams and stuff, and they get so excited to go in and just seeing how happy, like, a retriever is going in the water is amazing. And then they stay.
Yeah, cool. That's their element.
They love that shit.
Nico, they want to climb. They want to be dirty. They want to swim. They want to chase animals. Like, that's a perfect environment for them. But that's a big dog, so you got to consider that. There's going to be a 60-pound dog, at least. So I think the size of dogs people need to consider more. And what else? What else
we got here? Oh, there's your dog. So cute.
Oh, there she is. She wants to go outside. But I can't open the door because it's too loud out there. We live by LAX, and the airplanes go over every 2 minutes, and it comes up on the podcast, and it sounds like shit.
Oh, she's sitting in her bed. So cute.
That's her little bed under the cat stand. That's Angelita.
Say hi, Angelita.
Hi, puppy.
We call her Mama.
Oh, that's what I call my cat.
Yeah? It's easy. Easy nickname. All right, what else we got? Alec Mignero says, not sure I asked this yet. When you rub your dog's belly and their leg starts going or spazzing, are they actually enjoying this? I mean, I've never read any scientific evidence about it, but I assume so. They seem to like it to me. Cats and dogs have like a spot that you can scratch and they kick their leg. I think they like it, but I don't know. I'm not going to look that up. It seems
I've been wondering about that because Nico, I like almost never flea treat him because I hate the idea of putting chemicals into his skin. It freaks me out, but he got this season, he was scratching so much and I was like, fuck it, I'm going to have to frontline him. And he stopped scratching, but his skin still seems itchy. Like now when I rub his belly, now he's doing the leg thing and he wasn't doing it before. And I'm like, what's going on with him? I thought the same thing. I'm like, is he not like what's he never he almost never does the leg thing. And he's been doing it ever since like the whole flea incident.
Well, I mean, it could definitely make their skin more irritated when they have the flea bite. Like the flea bite, unfortunately, with the front line, they have to bite. The animal has to bite to die. So like the animal is still going to get the effects of a flea bite. And if your animal has a flea bite allergy, then they're still going to get the allergic reaction and make their skin itchy and sensitive. Even if you use the front line and you don't physically see any fleas
because
they're biting and they're dying.
Yeah, one flea.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people say. And it might not be fleas. I mean, sometimes dogs just get itchy skin to whatever. But if it is fleas, then, you know, the front line doesn't work as a repellent. You know, it just works as like a insecticide. But there are flea repellent and, you know, the flea preventative that has a repellent in it that exists. So try that out. Maybe it'll work better. But I use Frontline on my dog. I use Frontline Plus because it does fleas and ticks. And I think it does like maybe even some intestinal parasites, something like that. So I like the Frontline Plus because it's over the counter. You could just get it at the store. And I could order it online and get it for pretty cheap. I get Frontline Plus for the dog and the cat. And it works good enough. It does not work as good as something you need a prescription or something oral. Like anything you put on the skin is not going to work as well as something injectable or something oral like a pill. But it's cheaper, and I don't have to go to the vet, so I use it. And we get it from the internet. So you can also get it from Costco pretty cheap. You guys want to go look up Frontline. Active ingredient, fipronil. Look for any product with fipronil. Works okay. Here's the other last question. It's from my friend June. June is she worked with me at an animal hospital. She's an animal advocate and a really, really talented veterinary professional. And she asked, why is xylitol dangerous? You know what xylitol is?
It's like an artificial sweetener, right?
Yeah, exactly. And they put it in sugar-free gum. And I was just reading about it when she asked, and I just knew that it was poisonous and not exactly why. I thought it was something else. But apparently, the sugar-free part of it, the xylitol chemical, just doesn't allow insulin to be, it doesn't like increase or decrease the insulin levels in our blood, right? And the insulin is what makes you be hypoglycemic or not, like enough blood sugar or too little blood sugar. So for the xylitol in the dog, apparently it makes the sugar in the blood get absorbed like super rapidly. It increases the insulin in the dog's bloodstream. So then the sugar gets absorbed rapidly into the animal's cells. So then the animal doesn't have any more blood sugar. So it causes like extreme hypoglycemia. And they said within an hour of consumption, 10 to 60 minutes of eating the xylitol can have detrimental effects. Causes a rapid and profound decrease in the level of blood sugar. So I didn't know that, but that sounds pretty scary. Your animal all of a sudden becomes hypoglycemic and you don't know why, but it ate some xylitol gum. I don't know any other time I've seen xylitol besides in gum. So keep that in mind out there, people. All the stuff that your animal could eat and die, there should be like a list that you put on your refrigerator. They sell them, like the ASPCA. They probably give them away. Like a list of poisonous foods, poisonous plants, poisonous chemicals, things like that that you can keep your animal away from, hopefully. And that was it. Those are the Facebook questions. Thanks, guys. Thanks, June and Alec, Guam, and Stephanie. Do you have any pet questions before we go?
No, I feel like we've covered everything. Covered quite a lot of pet content.
All right, that's awesome. Okay, so the last segments are a question for you. How do you feel about eating animals? Are you a vegan, vegetarian, anything like that?
I am a flexitarian, so I eat I don't eat a lot of types of meat, and I eat meat very infrequently. Like, I definitely don't. I eat red meat maybe once a month every 2 months, and I, like, pretty much only eat beef. Maybe even less often I'll eat pork. Like, every once in a great fucking while I'll have some carnitas. But I eat chicken or turkey maybe a couple times a week, and the majority of my meals are plant-based. And that's how I feel best. I feel good about the reduction of my carbon footprint. Like, I look at it as like a numbers game of like, I do eat some animals, but I, versus like a normal meat eater, I save like hundreds of animals that I do not eat a year. And that's how my body feels best. And I think, and I've heard people say this, like, the problem is not that we eat meat, it's how much meat that we eat.
Definitely agree with that.
And I also mostly, like, beef is delicious, but I try to really, really limit my beef consumption because it takes so much more water and natural resources to create a pound of beef than a pound of chicken.
Yeah, I believe it. No, I think your answer is right on par with what I expect from people, just to being responsible about it. I mean, I ask this question to every guest. So most people say that they should be more responsible with their meat eating. That means at least being conscious of where their meat comes from, which will, I think, indirectly result in people eating less meat, right? If you're just more conscious about it, you're not just eating meat from everywhere, and you're at least like understanding that it's not even healthy for you to eat a lot of red meat, and you take those things into consideration before you purchase meat, buy meat, or eat meat, you're gonna eat less meat, I think, just as a result. But then some people are just like, I'm a meat eater, I don't care, I eat whatever I want. And like, that's fine too, but I feel like it's not morally responsible, especially if you call yourself an animal lover. You call yourself an animal lover, but you don't think there's any repercussions to us eating way more animals than we need to, as far as, you know, health is concerned, and just animal life is concerned, and animal welfare, when you see the conditions that these factory farmers are subjecting the animals to. Like, there's no way you could look at factory farming and not think there's something wrong with that, or that we couldn't do it better. Or that when you go to the grocery store and you see all this crappy meat, all this crappy red meat with all this fat in it, all this marbling, and you're spending your hard-earned money on food that's literally going to make you sick. So that's something that I don't understand with people who are just like, I'm going to eat whatever I want. See, like my wife and I have gone vegan. We've gone vegetarian. We go through spurts where we just try to eat no meat for a while, but definitely less meat than we would normally consume before we considered the ramifications. Say like pre-2015, I never thought about it. I never thought about how much meat I ate. But then as I started thinking about my health more and more, I think that's it, as I started getting older. And then I started thinking about just seeing the animals in those conditions is pretty heartbreaking. It makes you want to consider other methods. And then you see all the vegan and vegetarian trends blowing up. And it's like, okay, that's a bandwagon I could get behind. You know, if it's going to help animals and help my health, and if that's the new trend, and I'm against following trends, but that's a trend I think I can at least identify with.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that I similarly limit my dairy. Like, I never use real milk or cream I use some butter, and I sometimes eat cheese, like, especially if I'm out, but I also eat nut cheese. So, like, I'm not fully vegan, but, I mean, the dairy farming industry is also terrible, so I try to really be conscious of how much dairy that I'm contributing to that industry. You know, like, how much I'm buying and taking in.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty lucky that dairy, I'm pretty lactose intolerant, so I don't eat a lot of cheese or milk or anything like that, but the... That's lucky for me because I see that dairy industry and it's pretty heartbreaking too. As much as some people try to do it the right way, it's just hard to have a bunch of animals in one place where they're not getting any love or affection. They're just there being used for their resources. And I just don't think that that's what animals were meant for. I just really don't. Like, I used to not have an opinion on it, but I've just worked with so many animals that they definitely have feelings. However you want to describe those feelings or whatever spectrum you want to put those feelings on, there are happy animals and there are depressed animals. Like, you cannot argue that. And based on how you treat them and how you care for them, it has a huge effect on whether they're happy or depressed or living out their normal life. We know what a normal animal is supposed to be like. So when you go to one of those facilities, it's obvious that is not their normal life or habitat or any of that stuff. But whatever, I'm not here to tell anybody what they should or shouldn't eat. I just like to get the opinions of comedians because I feel like comedians actually think about what they're going to say before they say it instead of just saying shit. And other than that, did I have any other segments? No, that was it. The eating animals thing. And then do you have anything coming up that you want to plug?
Yeah, I have a podcast called Comics Book Club. I interview artists and authors and comedians about books. And I also have a show called The Vulnerability Show that's on Zoom. It'll be back in September. I don't know when this is coming out. And then you just follow me on my socials. I'm Rebecca Rush 639 on Instagram and Twitter.
Cool. We'll have all that in the description. You guys could follow Rebecca. Thank you so much for being here. What book do you recommend for the Pet Peeves podcast listeners?
Book that I read recently and really I read so much. My favorite book that I read this year was My Year of Rest and Relaxation.
Okay. My Year of Rest and Relaxation. Check that out. We'll put that in the description. This was fun. Thank you for doing it. I appreciate your time and everything. Thank you guys, everybody,
for
listening. Oh, you're welcome. Pet Peeves Podcast listeners, you guys are the best. Follow us on Instagram at Pet Peeves Podcast, on Twitter at Pet Peeves Pod. You can follow me, Albert Escobedo, at Albert Escobedo on Instagram or at Albert M. Escobedo on Twitter. Follow the Goon Squad Comedy Podcast. Oh, yeah, that's what I didn't want to forget. Niles Abston. Did you follow him on Twitter? He reminded me today to ask you to follow him back on Twitter. Do you know who Niles is?
I mean, I've heard of him, but, like, that's so weird to me that I would follow somebody because you told me to.
I asked him, I was like, dude, are you sure you want me to ask her this? And he's like, yes. I'm like, you want me to ask her live on the podcast? He's like, yes. I'm like,
that
all
makes
right,
me want to do it even less.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Like, I'm pretty rebellious by nature, and I'm like, yeah, no, like, I don't work for you, Niles. Like, you know?
Yeah, well, yeah, Niles, go fuck yourself. That's it. The Pet Peeves Podcast, Goon Squad Podcast. You can watch my stand-up special on YouTube. Don't judge me. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you one more time, Rebecca, for being here. You guys have a great day. That's it. We did it.